Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli, one of my favorite people in the whole world. Welcome back, sir.
Alan, one of my favorites back at you. Thank you for having me again.
I guess we should start with things are complicated. There was the Working Families Party's convention, and Andrew Cuomo promising to get the Democrats back into power in the New York State Senate survived. Did you play a role in all of that?
Well, I was certainly at the convention, at least for the early part, and pleased to be one of the nominees at the end of the deliberations. And for anybody who asked my opinion, I said that I was supporting Andrew Cuomo for re-election as governor. I was hoping the Working Families Party would follow the Democratic Party and the Independence Party in giving him the line, and I'm glad it worked out that way by the end.
Did his people call you up and say, Tom, we really need you now? Clearly, they were rounding up every vote and every person they could. Did they do that?
Well, nobody spoke to me directly, for better or for worse, but I think my opinion that the governor should be the nominee of WFP was clearly stated. And I think, as well, my desire to be the candidate of the Working Families Party, which, by the way, I was 4 years ago, and in my years running for the Assembly, the years that the party existed, was always backed by Working Families Party. So certainly there was never any doubt in my mind, regardless of what was happening with the rest of the ticket, that I wanted to be the nominee of the party. And, look, it was as everyone knows, a rather drawn out process. And late at night, they came to the decision on the gubernatorial race. But I think they ended up in the right place in that regard.
So Tom DiNapoli, all of that said, are there any basic philosophical differences between you and the governor?
Well, in terms of overall outlook, I would say no. I think we're both mainstream to progressive Democrats in point of view. Are there certain specific policy areas where we've had disagreements? There's no doubt, particularly with regard to the pension fund. Obviously, I have felt strongly that we need to preserve our defined benefit pension plan for our public workers. The governor has had a notion of providing an option for 401k style substitution for that. I don't support that point of view. And I'm sure if you look at certain other policy areas, you might find some areas of difference. But I think in the main, we very much share the same point of view and the same agenda.
Which is interesting because when you talk to the working families people, they of course are the progressive wing of sort of the Democrat type voters. They'll tell you that his views, Cuomo's views on things like taxation are not progressive. But I never heard anybody say that about you. So is there a real difference of opinion there?
Well, I think keep in mind my role is a little different. So as controller, I'm less in the day-to-day weeds of, the partisan debates that go on. I also think Working Families Party has a long history with me, so they know my record, not just as controller, but, from serving in the state assembly as well. When it comes to budget issues and tax issues, we look at the bottom line, will the state budget be in balance? And we, I certainly have left to the governor and the legislature to determine how they're going to come up with the revenues to meet the spending. So there's no doubt that on, the question of taxation, the Working Families Party has been very clear about income inequality in the state and the need for the tax code to better reflect opportunities to have a more level playing field. And I don't think anybody would disagree that our tax code, could use some updating and upgrading. Of course, people have different points of view about how to do that. But, I think the Working Families Party is an effective spokesperson for the middle class and for the poor in our state. I think the Working Families Party plays an important role in ensuring that on the Democratic side that a more progressive agenda is pursued. It's similar to the role the Conservative Party has played for many years in terms of impact on the Republican Party and their process. Now, some argue we shouldn't have these separate parties, but under the laws in the state, they are provided for. And as you could recall, in years past, we had the Liberal Party when the Liberal Party
imploded.
Yep. I think the Working Families has filled what many years ago had been the Liberal Party role in that regard. So I think those parties have they have a role to play and a voice that needs to be heard. And, for me, I've always been proud, as I said, to have that designation. And I think that it's going to be a boost to the Democratic ticket to have all three of the candidates, all four if you count the lieutenant governor, to be endorsed by working families. And I might add Independence Party, same thing. So it's three lines for Andrew Cuomo, for Eric Schneiderman and myself. And I think that, that helps us versus the Republican conservative coalition that you have for the other side.
Now, Andrew Cuomo says that he wants to get the New York State Senate Democrats back in power. You come out of the legislature as a Democrat. No question, if the Senate Democrats are there and under the present leadership, there will be a much more progressive outcome in the state than some people think Cuomo wants. Are you for getting those four or five guys, the Independent Democratic Conference, back over on the Democratic side?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Senator Andrea Stewart-Cousins. I think she'll be an outstanding majority leader. You know, obviously the Senate Democrats had some problems the brief time that they were in the majority. And I think Andrea is a very different style of leadership and, you know, a person of unquestioned integrity and skill. You know, look, you choose your sides in politics, right? I mean, I have plenty of friends who are Republicans. I grew up in a Republican household. My parents are Republicans. I don't dislike Republicans. There are good people on the Republican side. But, you know, I choose to be a Democrat, and that means I support Democrats winning, just as I know my Republican friends support Republicans winning. I think the dynamic of having the breakaway group of Democrats in the Senate has not been helpful. I think it's just created confusion. You know, the Democratic senators who I know are fine people who continue to espouse Democratic values. The reality is the ability to move the Democratic agenda has definitely been stifled by this coalition with the Republicans and the Independent Democrats. So I would certainly like to see the Independent Democrats rejoin the mainstream Democratic group. I would like to see all of us unite, which is sometimes hard for Democrats to do, to work in the election so we get an outright Democratic majority. As I said, Andrea Stewart-Cousins, I think, would be a superb majority leader.
Well, Tom, are you holding your breath? I happen to believe, by the way, personally, Alan speaking, that Andrew Cuomo had a lot to do with enabling the Republicans to keep control of the state Senate. There are many people who don't agree with that. But now he says, okay, I'm going to make sure that that doesn't continue to happen. Can he do that?
Sure he can. And he said he will. So my hope is that as we're all out on the campaign trail, especially, you know, we have a couple of seats that the Democrats hold now that are tenuous holds.
Wait, Tom. If Andrew Cuomo calls the five guys, the five Democrats who went over, some people call them the traitors or the enablers or whatever else, back into his office and shakes his fist at them and says, which, you know, he could be a, you know, fairly forceful guy, and says, you get back where you belong or, you know, goodbye.
Oh, but it's more than that. I mean, so
it could be done. My point being, it could be done tomorrow.
Well, all right. So you got a few weeks left in the session. We'll see. I think those Democrats have their own races to run. Some of them have primaries, as you know.
Ali Coppell versus Jeff Klein over there in the Bronx.
Yeah. So, I mean, look, in the short run, I don't know that you're going to see an immediate change as far as that dynamic. I think the bigger question is heading into the fall and holding on to the seats that the Democrats have, winning some of the seats. There are some very competitive seats, open seats on Long Island, you know, where I hail from. We have at least three races that are viewed as very competitive. You know, what will be the role of a United Democratic Party in securing those victories? And then when the dust settles, we'll see what the numbers are. And certainly if there are any of the IDC members that are still calling themselves IDC between the elections in January when the Senate will organize, that I think will be the time where we have to have that coming together.
Again, I want to remind all of our listeners who may be not as entrenched in all of this as we are that the IDC is the group of four or five Democrats who went to make common cause with the Republicans and kept Dean Skelos and his people in power. Okay, let's move on to the budget. I want to know about casinos. You've done reports on this. A casino is going to help or hurt us?
Well, I think the bottom line is the jury is out on that. I think marginally there will be a uptick in revenues to the state and an uptick in jobs created. But our report, you know, looked at the research that's out there, looked at the experience in other states. And, you know, I would just caution our report, I think, is a cautionary tale that while there may be some winners and some benefits, there are also no doubt going to be losers. The money that people will spend on gaming, casino gambling, will substitute for other entertainment expenses that exist right now. It may be hard to measure how those shifts will impact, but I think the notion, if folks have it, that there's going to be this great boost of revenue to the state, I think we better hold our wish list in abeyance for a while until we really see what the impact will be. Because I think there's just a finite amount of money that's out there for gaming. There's tremendous competition. You know, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, all neighboring us.
Connecticut,
absolutely. You know, I think by and large, our report would argue that it's less going to be drawing in people from outside of the state, tourism dollars. It's going to be more an impact of people living in proximity to these casinos. So it's New Yorkers. You have the other downside of compulsive gambling. It is a problem.
Oh, yes.
And could be a growing problem if you have more and more of these.
And we could be enabling in New York State by doing this. Right?
And we don't do enough to spend money to fight that. I mean, there are real families that will get hurt by that. So, you know, I think there are certainly negatives out there that we haven't fully.
Well, Tom DiNapoli, coming right down to it, Mr. Comptroller. Are you for it or not?
Well, you know, I have concerns about it. Again, this is a policy area that I've left to the legislature, and the people voted in the fall to allow the expansion.
Yeah, but it was a disgraceful ballot question, which really they were electioneering within the course of the ballot question. We all know.
Well, the point is it's coming. So I think what we need to do is just be careful in monitoring what the real impact will be, not over expecting a big revenue increase. And we really need to dedicate more resources coming out of this to deal with that compulsive gambling problem.
Okay. Okay. So now I know that one of the things your office is very interested in, you and personally are, you know, we got a new segregation, I believe, in colleges. Who can afford $60,000 to go to an elite college? And you're trying to do something about it with your college savings plan. You want to tell us about it?
Yeah, New York has had a great track record with what's called the 529 College Savings Plan. We administer it in the Comptroller's Office along with the Higher Education Services Corporation. And we just went through the month of May. The month of May is always the month we remind everybody, 529, May 29th, 529 College Savings Plan. It's a clever way to remind everybody, if you want to better prepare for those college expenses, 529 Savings Plan is a great way to put money aside for a child's college education. You get a tax break from it on New York State income taxes. And it's really a great program. Anybody can open an account for as little as $25. And you can have multiple accounts. So typically it's a parent or a grandparent, but anybody, an uncle, anybody that cares about a young person. And we suggest open up this account early in the child's life because the money accrues, you get the tax break. It really makes sense all around. And then when the child hits 18, 19, whatever age they're going to college, you now have a nest egg of money put aside to pay for tuition and room and board. And it does help, in some cases, deal with the cost or at least reduce the burden. Because if people suddenly start thinking when their kid is a junior or senior in high school that they got to pay for college, it's a little late to start saving at that point.
So exactly explain how the tax break works.
You get up to $5,000 for a single, $10,000 for married, filing jointly. You get a tax break on your New York State, not on the federal, on the New York State piece of it. So that's the plus for the person who's putting the money aside. And obviously, you know, for the student, the money is there at the time that they're going to be going to school.
Let's talk a little bit about the pension funds. I don't know. I don't know what to say to you. You are the sole trustee of the pension funds. You have obviously a lot of very talented people working for you. The pension fund has been doing much better. It's great news for the localities because, you know, they're going to have to put less money in as a result of the work you guys have been doing up there. So we know that the governor, when he was AG, was advancing this plan that there would be a board to make all these decisions, taking the power away from you. You don't like it. I don't like it. I think it's an example of a little bit of overreach on the governor's part. The governor's people are saying, no, he doesn't want it all. He'll just get to name some. The legislature will get to name some. DiNapoli will get to name some. But in the end, when you add it all up, it will really redound to the governor, won't it?
Well, I think that's the concern. Look, you know, a board can work, and in most states, that's a typical model. But in many other states, you've had problems because a board that's controlled by a governor and or the legislature will too often make decisions on managing the pension fund that has an impact on their short-term budget problems rather than the long-term interests of the pension fund. And in New York, one of the main reasons why we've had such a strong pension fund is that the controller, as an elected official, independent, has been the guardian of the pension fund, not allowing money to be used for budget purposes. That's how New Jersey has gotten into trouble. So protecting the fund has been an important role of the elected independent controller. I don't want to see that to be taken away.
Well, the governor has a guy named Lawski who's been sniffing around, you know, your office. You did your job. You went and you continued to list various state agencies. Are they doing it right? And then for some reason, this guy showed up on your doorstep with their bill and said, we're going to audit you, Mr. Comptroller. Some people thought it was untoward. I wonder what you're thinking.
Well, you know, we are a very transparent organization. And when Eliot Spitzer was governor, seems like a long time ago, but it really wasn't. When we first saw the problems that we were having with our pension fund, I worked with Governor Spitzer and Eric Dinallo, then the insurance superintendent, and we revitalized the regulatory oversight of the state insurance department. Well, now we have financial services substituting for insurance department. So we respect that.
That's
oversight
That's Lorsky's
role.
Group.
Yep. You know, I felt the audit that they did put out that looked at that IT missed many of the points of the changes that we are in the process of implementing.
Well, there are people, come on now, Tom, there are people who think that he's just, the governor has never been a friend of yours, is out to get you. You know, many of us, it annoys us, but don't you think that that's what this is all about?
Well, I'm not one to, you know, believe in conspiracy theories or look under my bed every night, maybe I should, but I felt their audit was wrong, and we said very clearly it was wrong and pointed out where it had missed the point, and I'm very proud of the work that we've done. I'm not afraid of appropriate oversight, and if the oversight is not being handled properly, we're going to call it out. So,
but you're an elected official of the state, an independently elected official of the state. You know, I mean, it seems to me that once the governor's people, first of all, ask, you know, the governor says, I want to be looking at the way in which you make your pension decisions. Every politician would like to get their hands on that kind of money. And then in comes Lorsky. One and one makes two, doesn't it?
Well, as I said, Alan, we are very proud of the work that we do, and it stands up to scrutiny. I think it did over the course of the 8 years, it will continue to, and we're going to fight hard to protect the interests of the pension fund and our retirees.
Tell me about the minimum wage in New York. Shouldn't we have a higher minimum wage?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is one of those issues dealing with income inequality. We have too many people at the lower end of the wage scale. We've regrown many jobs in the state as we dig out from the recession. Many of them, though, are in retail or in healthcare, lower end of the wage scale. So I certainly think having, you know, you even look at what other states are moving. New York is not necessarily the leader in this area. Having a higher minimum wage, indexing it to inflation, all those strategies would make sense.
So you've been doing audits of all of the various city agencies and others. Have you found anything that particularly glaring looks up at us?
I'd have to say the most glaring, because it keeps happening, is in the audits we're doing of special education teaching services.
What is that?
Well, you've got special needs children that require specialized services that the public schools don't necessarily provide. So we have a system in New York where private contractors, in some cases for profit, some cases not for profit, directly contract, and they, with oversight from the state education department, then get a reimbursement based on certain regulations.
They have to do certain things, right?
Sure.
And they can't do other things.
But we're finding they're doing other things. We're finding outright ripping off of the program, in the most extreme cases, administrators using the money for no-show jobs, for personal expenses at their homes.
Like what kind of personal expenses at their homes?
Patio tiles, video equipment. In other cases, spending money on so-called staff retreats that involve alcohol and basically are parties for the staff. You know, timesheets that really raise into question whether, in fact, the people are being paid for work that's actually being done. But we found this not just in one or two, but we found this in at least now, you know, more than half a dozen of these programs where there actually have been arrests. We're working with local district attorneys and the U.S. Attorney's Office in at least one case. We've been able to recover millions of dollars in restitution. But even more important, we work with the legislature and the governor to ensure that each one of these programs will now be audited. That's going to be a multi-year initiative on our part, not just the kind of spot checking that we've been doing. And state education department is going to be coming up with stronger regulations. But these are
money. How do they get away with this stuff?
Well, because nobody really was looking.
I run public radio stations. I'm not about to break any rule whatsoever. I'm scared to death that I will do that. These people had to know what they were doing.
Well, but if they know their oversight is, in this case, from the state education department, and it's not happening, you get away with it once, you get away with it twice. Mm-hmm. And not everybody. I don't want to slam all the programs, because there are many programs that, in fact, many teachers, even in programs within problems, that are doing the right thing. But there have been some real egregious situations. There was another case where money was being diverted from one of these special ed programs, questionable whether any services were being delivered to the kids, and money being diverted to a camp that was owned by the same person, you know, a summer camp. So crazy stuff where there's a sense no one's watching the store. Well, the controls office was watching the store, and now we're going to watch the store even more. There are so many cases when taxpayer money is ripped off, you get upset. When it's money going to special needs children, I get really upset. So this area continues to be an important focus for us.
You just named a special investigator for your group. What's that about?
Well, what we did, we have an investigations unit, and we have elevated the role of this unit. Unfortunately, Alan, there are still too many cases where we find public officials, appointed officials, who are corrupt, ripping off taxpayers. You know, we have our joint effort with Attorney General Schneiderman that's focused on this, but we're also working with U.S. attorney and district attorneys across the state when we find problems. So we have an investigations unit, and it's now headed by Nelson Sheingold, because we see still a need for us to be very involved in this area of preventing corruption. I'm elevating the role of this unit in our organization. We're going to add some additional resources, a little more staff, not a lot more, but really to have us be positioned to work alongside with prosecutors and investigators as part of the effort to clean up government, not just here in Albany, but across the state. So it's not brand new. It's just been enhanced within our organization. And unfortunately, the need continues for us to play this role.
So when you do these audits, and nobody likes to be audited, is there pushback from these folks, and how do they do that?
Well, it varies. Some people, in fact, do want to be audited. In fact, we often find that when there's a change in administration, a new administration will come in and say, you know, please take a look at some of our operations. And that makes sense. It's a good practice. In other cases, we will come up with an order that may make some positive suggestions on improving operations. And again, it may be accepted with a spirit of, okay, thank you, we're going to take those recommendations. There are cases, though, as you point out, where people say, how dare you? In effect, how dare you? And you're wrong. Your auditors got it wrong. And they are allowed to come up with a written response. We include the response in our final order that we print. We're not afraid to print, you know, the different point of view if that's there. But in the overwhelming majority of cases, I do think that our audits, because they are credible and sound and done professionally. In fact, even if there's an entity that's audited that doesn't like the fact that a spotlight was shined on them, they will acknowledge that they need to do an improvement and they will accept our recommendation. So really the worst that happens in terms of pushback is a disregard, because my audits are not enforceable in the sense that I make recommendations and you're compelled by law to implement them. You are supposed to come up with a corrective action plan. And of course, the light of day, people reading our audits, that in most cases provides that persuasion from the public that you better respond to what the controller's saying.
Tom DiNapoli, you work very hard. Are you going on vacation this summer?
Not this summer. No, I'm not allowed this summer, but hopefully after November. We have an election, Alan, a lot of work to do. It's a big state. I got to get around.
Well, you got an opponent, but nobody is taking it all that seriously.
Well, but that's how you have a mistake.
From Onondaga County, yeah. Robert Antonacci. I never heard of him before, but you have to take it all seriously.
Absolutely.
Right?
And, you know, I love the opportunity.
And he's taking the government money
under the quote-unquote pilot program.
Pilot program.
Yeah. Which will give him some resources.
Well, how about you? Do you have enough money to run?
Well, we never have as much as others, but I think we'll have enough to get our message out. And we have been working hard, you know, year after year. And that's why I won't be taking vacation. I will be, besides our government schedule, keeping a very active political schedule to reconnect with voters across the state. And we will take no race for granted. And I'm looking forward to a victory, hopefully a good, solid victory, and 4 more years serving as controller.
And the governor has indicated, the governor's people have indicated to me that they are going to endorse you this time. Is that right?
Well, we had a very unifying Democratic convention, and the governor was very kind to mention me in a speech in a positive way, and I'm pleased to be running with him. And I think supporting each other will be the best guarantee that, in fact, the notion that the Democrats are going to win this year, that that's going to become a reality. And hopefully a unified Democratic ticket at the top will get Democrats elected all across the board. We have some tight congressional races, state Senate races we talked about. So unity among Democrats is sometimes an elusive goal. This year, I think it's important that we have it.
So no circular firing squad.
Well, you know what the big issue is going to be? Turnout. You know, I really think it's a non-presidential, non-senatorial election this year. I think, you know, the big challenge for us is to make sure our voters understand they should not take 2014 for granted.
We're out of time. Our guest has been New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. It's often been said that you're one of the nicest guys in state government, but I understand that you're preparing a response to the LCA show, which is something that happens. Will you disabuse them of the notion that you're the nicest guy?
Well, it's very possible that they will see a different side of me, but so we certainly want people to.
There is another side of you?
Well, you know, every now and then there is, believe it or not.
I've never seen it.
You've come close to provoking me, Ella, but not quite close enough.
Thank you. Thank you, Tom DiNapoli. Oh, wonderful to have you with us.
Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Ella.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.